Gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the most demonized 2 hours in talk radio, plagued with CIA-caused technical difficulties and Mossad-caused technical difficulties. They don't like us very much. Why? Because we expose their scumbaggery. That's right. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, broadcasting live from New Zealand, from Auckland, the fabulously fluoridated capital, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Check us out at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and join us in the chat room there, if you dare. My very special guest today from Wake News is Detlev, one of the fabulous, shall we say, he's kind of like a bottle of glue that helps to hold the United We Strike radio marathon together. Detlev, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Hi, Vinnie. It's great you have me here in your show. How is it over there at your place?
It's a bit toasty, actually, to tell you the truth.
Really?
Very warm indeed. And things are hotting up now with fracking starting in New Zealand, assets being sold off, and also Codex Alimentarius food bills where people with guns will be able to come on your property and arrest you for giving your neighbour a turnip. So so things aren't looking too good. But on the other side of the fence, of course, there's a heck of a lot of people waking up to it because the government is moving so fracking fast.
Well, then it's it really looks like over here in Europe, and you know, I'm based here in Switzerland, close to Germany and France. So basically, I used to get my fish over there in France, but you know, since all the radioactivity is going on, the nucleus is added to the fish. I'm not so fond of that anymore, but the cheese is fine. So yeah. You know,
or as the French say, fromage.
Fromage, yeah.
Well, you know what they say.
Fromage. Yeah.
Well, you know what they say, men are, or is it, women are from Venus and men are from Mars.
That's right. Well, you put it right, Vinny. And yeah, but I admire your, let's say, your enthusiasm, because it's not an easy job what you're doing over there, is it?
I don't know. It depends on the definition of ease. Now, I find ease as in terms of it's not actually terribly difficult per se, you know, like I don't have to sit here and think real hard or anything because all the facts and figures and everything are in my head. And if they're not in mine, they're probably in my guests. So it's not hard in that respect. On the other hand, it's time consuming. And give you an example, Detlev, yesterday I was up starting work on this radio show and the new Mr. News Counterspin videos, which are already the episodes for today, are uploaded to my YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, where we debunk the main headlines of the mainstream media in the mornings and have them uploaded before the mainstream media actually goes to air in prime time at 6 p.m. so that people now have a truther, activist news service that's professionally done and in video ready for them kind of thing. And last night I went to bed at 3 a.m. So 8 a.m. to 3 a.m. And then this morning I was up at 6 and I'm at it again. So it is hard work to a degree, but because you're having so much fun and associating with so many, well, to be honest, fracking awesome people like yourself, it makes it just that much easier.
Yeah, Vinny, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I just checked that we are also basically parallelly streaming here on United We Strike Radio, you know, which I usually use for my transmissions for Wake News Radio. So it actually should work now. So you see, also over here, we do have certain technical issues to solve, but we finally made it. Isn't that great?
It really is. And can you just explain, of course, you're the progenitor of Wake News Radio and you're awake to the New World Order. How did that all come about? Because everybody's got an interesting story about how they woke up.
Oh, absolutely. And I used to live in the Matrix like everybody else, or like most. You know, there are some people who are awake since they were born, you know. That's incredible. Yeah, but no, I awoke about, let's say, 4 years ago. And, you know, coincidentally, doing some research and on the internet, I was in business, you know, my own business as a consultant. And, you know, I stumbled upon a video showing a chemtrail flyer, you know, a plane which was you know, sort of exhausting, something strange in the back. And I was very curious about that. And I found out more about it. And I stumbled upon even more things. And one added to the other. And then, you know, I started investigating. And now here I am. I'm a fighter in the front line. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I mean, because in your particular area of the world, what are the big issues for you right now?
Well, I had an interesting conversation yesterday. We had a big discussion with well-known people over here, German-speaking, with a few other radio stations. You know, we try to cooperate now together to have something set against the Matrix media over here. We know we have this mass media here in Europe as well. And we do have, and that's what we found out, all the same problems. We do have a certain group of people or persons or beings, maybe, which we call the dominant insane minority or the DIMS. And they have a followership which are called the CRAPS. Criminals run all politicians. Does that sound familiar to you, Vinny?
Well, see, it's impossible for it to not sound familiar.
I would guess. So, and, you know, and
it matters not which country you're in. It only matters your level of awareness of the country you're in.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and we are pretty close to the UK, or let's say England, or let's say the city of London. Now, that's not very far away. Most people probably know things about the city of London. But also, you know, I'm based here in Basel, that's in Switzerland. It's a German-speaking part of Switzerland. And we do have the biggest fraud bank around, which is the Bank of International Settlements. That's, you know, all the rules are being made from here for all the banksters around the world by the Rothschild-owned Bank of International Settlements. That's not far away from me here. So I'm in the middle of the hell.
You're in the heart of darkness there, Detlev.
And why not? That's what I would say, yes, I guess.
See, I wouldn't be surprised if you walk down there and outside the Bank of International Settlements, you find a whole lot of macabre, bodies strung up all over the place and people chanting, oh, the Bank of International Settlements, oh, yes, eugenics.
Well, if you would be around here, I would see you protesting every day, you know, with the signs up and, you know, things like that, and trying to enter the Bank of International Settlements. But we are in Switzerland, and people here are very discreet, you know, very discreet. And you know, the Bank of International Settlements can do whatever they want. They do their own, they do have their own police force. They are absolutely out of touch, out of limits here by you know, they cannot be touched by anybody. Like City of London or, you know, whatever, Washington, D.C. or whatever, what have you. I mean, or the Vatican.
And that's very surprising considering the amount of assault weapons that people in Swiss houses have.
Yes, but they managed, you know, the craps, the criminals run all politicians. They managed actually to take away all the ammunition for the people. So there are lots of guns around and, you know, heavily equipped everybody and, you know, but the ammunition, they took the ammunition away. So this may sound familiar.
What the heck is the point in that? You know, it's like, we've got these incredibly heavy guns, you know, and just like we can walk around with them, we can shoot. Oh, wait, we can't shoot anybody. We can't defend ourselves. We can't do anything. What exactly is the Swiss defense plan now? You know, use harsh language?
Well, I don't know. I just try to survive over here, I must admit. You know, it's a very tough job because, you know, the Americans, I mean, not the American people, obviously, the U.S. administration. Is putting, especially
don't you mean,
Fed.
Don't you mean the U.S. regime?
Well, you would call it like that, yes. You know, but...
every time they have
I'm
some
polite.
Kind of...
I'm very polite.
Yeah, every time they have somebody they want to demonize, they don't call them an administration or a government. They call them a regime. So I've decided to call the United States regime the regime. You know, that's basically what it is. Let's stop messing around here.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, everybody, all the governments around the world, basically, who are under the NWO umbrella, they are part of this regime. They are part of this dictatorship. And, you know, the Swiss regime, is this? No, well, then it would be a Swiss regime then as well. They are following the U.S. regime very tightly. And they have to, you know, obey the American regime. Isn't that funny? Would you have ever thought about this, you know, the Swiss, you know, democracy and your direct democracy, one of the safest places in the world? You know why Switzerland is safe? Do you know that? Why?
It's a good question. I have no idea.
Well, it could be the guns, but, you know, they haven't got any ammunition, so it doesn't help. Well, it's basically because it's Rothschild's country. So that's why I have a very good internet connection in Basel, you know, because he's got everything equipped fine, you know. It's everything is very, very high quality, see. And the underground bases are here as well, you know. So no, and all that stuff, you know, everybody knows, okay.
Isn't yeah.
So that's my fate here, over here. Well, basically, I'm not Swiss, by the way. I am German, right?
Uh-huh.
But I live in Switzerland since ages. I mean, it's already a long time ago. Yeah, that's my life over here. And the fighting is stopped.
Isn't David Dees also in Switzerland?
Well, I haven't met him yet, but could well be, yes. Well, it's one of the safe places. I mean, it's safer than the U.S.,
See, I'm wondering whether or not this is an illusion, Detlev, whether or not there is such a thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, then we're talking about the Matrix. I mean, what do we believe and what we don't believe and what is the real truth and so forth? I mean, is it really true that there's a Rothschild? Is it true that there's a New World Order? Is it true that there's a Switzerland, really? Or is it just imagination? Is it just illusion? What do you think?
I don't know. You know, it's kind of like I try to keep tabs on nothing, right? I think everybody else keeps tabs on everything for me, and I just wind up interviewing them, that kind of thing, and I learn what I can when I can. But ultimately, I feel kind of like at a loss most of the time, Detlev, because I'm not reading the documents or the legislation like some of the more, shall we say, scholastically gifted truthers out there.
Well, we do have some of them in our United with Strike initiative, like Charles Urban. He's very read. I mean, you've met him as well. I mean, I don't know. Has he been in one of your shows already, Charles Urban?
No, I don't believe okay. I've had him on. If you send me his contact details, I'll get him on.
Yeah, you should, because he's very knowledgeable about everything legal and lawful and so forth in the U.S. And I've learned quite a lot of him. And that's another thing which I do over here. I don't know whether I ever told you about it, that I have legal fights against banks and credit card companies and so forth.
You've never told me this.
Oh, I never did. Yeah, it's one of my hobbies.
Some people build model aircrafts. Detlev destroys banking cartels.
Well, I don't know whether I will ever succeed, but at least it gives a lot of attention. So I had a couple of them this year already. Some trials here in Basel, in Switzerland. There's credit card companies which I owe. They say I owe some money to them. And,
Well, I think they'd have to prove that they actually had money to loan you in the first place, which they can't. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest from wakenews.net is Detlev, and we'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
But I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles. But I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me?
Welcome back. Eligible?
It's time to get down to the question of eventual.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And it's funny being from New Zealand and finding out about all this New World Order stuff and finding out that... I actually, to be honest, it was Americans that woke me up to all of this. So it seems very fitting that an American would give me a platform to help wake up more Americans and New Zealanders to the New World Order. And it's a global war. We are at war, ladies and gentlemen. Make no mistake. We are under attack from every direction. This isn't a war of two fronts. This is a war of a million fronts. But can you name me a war where an attacker has been able to win a war on more than two fronts, let alone a million? They don't fracking exist. They're going down. They know they are. We're going to win. We know we will. It's only a matter of time. We've already won. We're just going through the motions here. Detlev from wakenews.net is my guest. Welcome back. And you have been exposing banking scumbaggery. Can you please continue on?
Oh, yeah, sure. Thanks, Vinny, for having me on your show today. Here over in Switzerland, it's midnight, sort of, half past midnight. Just to let you know, to let our listeners know that I just stayed up just for you, Minnie. Isn't that great?
That was very nice of you too,
isn't it? Yeah, no, but I mean, you know, when I was in the Matrix, I used credit cards. Can you imagine? So, I didn't know about anything about the money system at that time. I had some money, so it didn't really matter at that time. And you know, then afterwards, as I stumbled upon the money system and discovered all the evil behind this and how this all works together, well, I stopped paying the credit card company. And actually, it went fine. You know, they sent me letters, you know, saying, well, reminders, sort of, you know, don't you want to pay finally? Things like that. And I never answered. And after a while, let's say after 2 years or so, they, you know, said, well, then we have to get you in front of the court. I said, yeah, just go ahead. And then they did it, and then I started, with the help of my friends, I put all together all the argumentation, in German, obviously, and set up, you know, some material against them, and I tried to fight it, and indeed, it's not over yet. So I'm still in the struggle with those credit card companies, and they are speechless because of all of my arguments, you know, with strawman things, and you know, and this famous case. I don't know whether you know that one, Daley versus First National Bank in Montgomery. That was 1968, and Daley, that was an attorney. He actually fought against a bank which gave a loan to build a house for him. Yeah, and he could prove that this money actually didn't exist before the contract was made. And he actually convinced the judge to call in the director of the bank, and the judge asked, is that true, what Mr. Daley says? And says, yes, it's true. I mean, the money was not there. It was created at the point of, setting up this contract. And before then, so there's nothing lost. And therefore Daley won this trial, but you know, then the politicians came in, and you know, that could not be what was not supposed to be. I mean, but you know all that, Vinny, don't you? Isn't that funny? What do you think?
Well, it depends whether or not you have a crazed sense of humor.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I tell you.
Which I do. So I do find it very amusing.
Yeah, well, you should have seen the faces. You know, here in Basel, where I had this trial the other day, they were speechless. Nervous, you know, the eyes were, the lids were nervously, you know, up and down and so forth. And then, you know, in shock. They were in shock. There was somebody who discovered that we are living in a matrix made by banksters. Mm. Yeah, that's the way. And I also had some visitors and guests and media, you know, attending. And, you know, I report about this in my radio shows, and I, you know, write my articles and my blogs. And so the whole city of Basel, which is a state of its own as well within Switzerland, they are attending my website all the time. So, you know, even the Federal Reserve Bank, you know, is a frequent guest on my pages. FederalReserve.org.
That's not isolated either, though, is it, Detlev? I mean, you're probably the fourth or fifth person that I've seen online or on this radio show who's been talking about just how many visits they are getting onto their websites from government agencies and government agencies that aren't government agencies, like the Fed and things of that nature. So we are being surveilled, right? And this is, and the thing is, let them watch. Every moment they do, our propaganda works to convert them and turn them against their masters. Let them watch. Let them watch their own fracking demise, I say.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely, I agree. And it's fun. It's actually fun. And you like your job as well. I mean, it's not a job for you, Vinny. It's your mission. Isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Demolition is my mission, and the target is scumbaggery.
Banks to bashing, sort of.
Yeah, well, the thing is, Throughout history, it's always been the weaker or defenseless enemy that has been attacked, and I feel that the media, politicians, banksters are now defenseless because nobody's on their side anymore. So, like a bully, I'm just picking on them.
Yeah, even the politicians are fleeing. There is a certain unrest within the politician community, and also the judges. I don't know whether I told you, and why not? I mean, do you know about the legal status of the Federal Republic of Germany?
No. Doesn't it not exist because it's part of the EU, which has usurped all its sovereignty and power?
Well, yeah, that's how they want to put it, but the cause is another thing. You know, right after the war, the Second World War, the Allied forces, the victors, they actually created the Federal Republic of Germany, which was just a part of the former German Reich in the western part. And you know where this... little country was founded at which place? Would you know? No?
No, idea.
Well, it was founded not in Bonn, which used to be the central place for government. It was founded in Frankfurt, and in a very specific house, and it was a villa of Rothschild. Does this sound familiar?
In fact, I have been to a villa of Rothschild, and I love it how they always call it villas because it's very, very close to the word villain.
Yeah, villain, yeah, that's, absolutely. Yeah, that's the English language. Is a great one, isn't it? I mean, you know.
Well, it allows for a lot of creativity. Like, for example, last night I was at a meeting and they were talking about... you know how back in the day there was this argument that worker productivity needs to be increased, and what they did is they just decreased their wages kind of thing? And they were wondering, like, what is productivity to these people? What's their definition of it? And I put my hand up. The definition of productivity is products and naivete.
That's a good one. Yeah, Winnie, you're good at that. You express exactly what people feel. And what they actually should say, but they are missing the words, the right words. That's pretty good. Yeah, but let me finish this German story because it's so funny. I mean, most people just don't know. So it was actually created in the villa of Rothschilds in Frankfurt. You know, the Rothschild family comes origins out of Frankfurt, as you may know. They were used to be called Meyer Amschel before they switched over to Rothschild because, I don't want to repeat this story. Everybody knows anyways. Then the German Federal Republic of Germany is not a sovereign state. It has never been. After the war, after the Second World War, the German Reich or the former Germany lost its sovereignty because, there was no more government and it was split in different parts and so forth. And after that, the Federal Republic of Germany never received the status of a sovereign state. It's a non-governmental organization. So, and Mrs. Merkel, which is so famous and running the show here in the EU, she isn't even head of a state. She's just, a general manager of a non-governmental organization. And that fits, again, what you just said, into the whole EU fascism organization, which is not a state either. Or, it is... what is it? It's a dictatorship... Corporate dictatorship.
Well, the EU is exactly as it sounds. It makes you go, ew! Because it's quite gross, isn't it? Quite disgusting, you have a look at them. How long ago did we throw off fascism and Nazism and lose 40 million people, 20 million civilians and 20 million troops in Europe? Okay, quite some time ago. Maybe we need to do it again.
Yeah. Most of the people, I mean, the new president of the European Parliament is a German, is Martin Schulz, and he's a socialist, a Marxist actually, but acting as a fascist. I mean, it's a funny combination, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not.
From him looking like, looks is one thing. Not everybody can be as nice looking as we do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was talking to James Dellingpole. He's kind of exposing the EU and the global warming swindles and what have you. And he said that what people have really got this confused. Fascism and communism aren't left wing and right wing. They're actually both hardcore radical left wing. Nazi was the National Socialist Party. The Communist Party took over Russia, and the red in the Nazi flag was actually a homage to communism for Hitler. Okay, even though they used communists as a fall guy, you know, false opposition sort of thing during the time when the Fascist Party, the brown shirts and things of that nature were taking over Germany. And what was it? What did he say? Oh, yes. And Stalinistic propagandists tried and succeeded to make people think that communist Russia was actually different and of a different spectrum to fascism. When the reality is, if you're a citizen in that country, or you have a look at its economic policy or how it treats its people, how it runs business, etc., they're identical.
True. Very true, and it's even getting more interesting if you look behind the curtains, because all those parties and all those politicians at that time were financed by capitalism, by all the Rockefellers, Rothschilds, and their agents. You know, so and if you look at, I mean, I'm not religious myself, okay, and though I have been raised a Christian, this is more relating to me, but I also have friends of different religious beliefs. I mean, like Muslims and Jews and so forth. So that's not the issue. But if you look behind the curtains, I don't know whether you ever discussed this in your shows, but they are the Khazarian Jews. And if you look behind all the key players, you know, in all the corporations, in the banks, in the media, in Hollywood, and what have you, that is very striking. Most of them are Jews, but which is nothing wrong with Jews. But they are. If you look behind into their history, they actually get out of Khazarian roots. I don't know whether your audience is familiar with that, and I don't want to raise this issue necessarily, but. You know, just as a reminder, and if you are interested, or if your audience is interested, they should look it up. What that is, there's a difference. Zionism and is also a different thing. I don't know whether you ever discuss those issues here, and I don't want to get into that if you don't like it.
Oh, it's one of my pet hates.
Really? Well, anyway,
you see, I love. Because when people talk about Zionism, they're afraid that AIPAC will come get me, it reminds me of the Lord of the Rings when they're in Helm's Deep and they're waiting for this huge torrent of Uruk-hai orcs to come over in. Let them come; they will break upon us like water on rock. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The Fortress of Talk Radio, and we'll be right back after the break.
I got some so-called friends, I'll smile right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. To know who's that are you on? I'm flying a JFK.
Welcome back.
My heart goes boom, boom, boom.
To the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Don't take me to that little room. Oh, yeah. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The show that's all about being groped when you don't want to be by the TSA pedophile trash. 2 hours a day, 5 days a week on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, where molestation is all okay by me. I'm joking, of course. Detlev is my very special guest from, is it wakenews.net?
True, yeah, and Wakeness Radio, and yeah.
Okay, so make sure if you are listening in from Europe, and I always encourage people to do this, find the truthers and the patriots in your neck of the woods, as well as networking with people all over the world. There's a good reason for it as well. It's because you want to be independent. All right. Ultimately, that's the problem with our countries. I see now, Detlev, is that we're becoming interdependent. You know, I need you, you need me, and without each other, we're screwed, sort of thing. That's how globalism is seeking to work, so that nobody can determine their own future. And in the truth movement, I feel that we must be reticent of that fact and connect with people all over the place, and also make sure that we have a foot firmly planted in both worlds, right here at home and right there out in the rest of the world.
Very true. And I think this is really very, very nice. And I also met all the people of United We Strike right after Karen started her tax-free 15 initiative in the U.S., that was in 2010. And after I heard her on the Alex Jones show, I was quite impressed, and I gave her a shout, so to say, and got in contact with her. And since then, we have been cooperating in setting up this this international initiative. And we've been, it's growing, and it's getting attention. And we are being disturbed, you know, when we do our shows. Hey, and all the people who get onto our websites and figure us out, and, you know, all the spies and everybody and the agents, and, you know, they like our shows as well, I think.
Well, see, and that's why I said before earlier is let them watch, because you cannot be exposed to this information without it affecting you. It's not possible, okay? And it may not wake you up today. It may not wake you up tomorrow, but someday. It's what I call the Bogart truthers.
Yeah, that's a good expression. That's nice. Yeah, you've got so beautiful ideas. And you get it out your mouth like nothing. You know, that's amazing. Great.
I'm blessed with good eugenics.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're talking about a subject which is taking place. The eugenics program of our dear friends, the dominant insane minority, out of the air, within the food, within the water. Is that the same thing in New Zealand?
Exactly the same thing. Exactly. We've got chemtrails, we've got fluoride, we've got tyrannical government, police state measures, security cameras everywhere, the whole nine yards.
Oh dear. So we are pretty close connected here. Closely connected, you know, with the New World Order. That's our global government.
Well, the thing is, it's often enemies that unite people. Okay. You don't unite because you've got something in common per se. You unite because you have an enemy in common. You know, the things you love can bring you together, but so can the things that you hate. And quite frankly, I just hate the idea of having no freedom of any kind for myself or for future generations, and being exterminated and living under the dominion of darkness of a giant satanic eugenicist technocratic cult. I hate that idea.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, I don't. I mean, what is the purpose of us being here, anyways? I mean, that is a question which many people pose themselves and pose to others. Do you discuss issues like that as well in your shows?
Everything. I don't set the bar very high, to tell you the truth, Detlev. You know, if somebody sends me an email and they want to come on my show, even if I don't agree with them, even if I think they might be just a little bit nuts, or even if I've never heard of them, and that's actually probably the majority of the show, I just bring them on anyway, because everybody's got a story to tell. And frankly, I find its diversity and cooperation are two of the things that the New World Order hates, as well as being made fun of. So on this show, it's all about diversity, cooperation, and making fun of the people who hate it.
Oh, that's very, very true. And, you know, that's so amazing. I mean, if you talk to, you know, judges, you know, who are used to be worshipped, sort of, you know, and then you tell them, I'm a sovereign, I'm a natural person, I want this and I want that. And, you know, what I do usually is I send them bills, right? I send them bills, you know, because they send me bills as well. So, that's the way it goes. So, you know, that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, that's what the whole thing is all about, to stand up, to be...
Lev, I just had some technical difficulties on my end dropping off there. There has been issues with Skype in the last couple of days, and I've been having some issues with my internet as well. So some very, very strange stuff going on. I'm not sure if it's Mossad or CIA. It might just be a virus in the system, a ghost in the machine, or maybe somebody doesn't have their Skype settings in a particular... You never know. But anyway, I'm sorry. What were you saying?
Oh, I'm sorry myself. I thought it would be streaming anyways, but... you know, if you stand up for your right, if you say that if I say I am a sovereign, I am people, then they are very afraid and they do have respect. Because, you know, unless you say it, they think you are a slave, right?
You know what? You touched on something very interesting there. It's respect, right? And people will respect you for one or two reasons. One, because you do incredible things and they admire you, or two, you do horrible things and they fear you.
Yeah, and fear is what they use. I mean, I know you're talking about this as well. Fear is their instrument in order to put the chains on us and let us crawl in front of them. Is that your impression as well? Yeah. That's what you think.
Yeah, pretty much. Eh? I don't buy into the fear per se, although I am actually at my base core quite a cowardly man. I'm not actually that brave. I am very afraid of being arrested. I've been arrested twice, Detlev, and both times I've had massive panic attacks because I fear being locked in a room. So,
oh yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's a drag. I mean, I agree. But on the other hand, I mean, that's why you have to build lots of people around you, lots of friends and groups, you know, who are assisting you, helping you, visiting you, and that is very important. So we have to go public with everything, so everybody knows. And that is one of my missions, as I see it, is to spread the news, to spread the information, to encourage people also here in the German speaking area. I mean, that's my main focus, right? To stand up against the tyranny. And I understand you do that as well over there in New Zealand, and obviously with your show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the New World Order is multilingual and transnational, and so must the resistance that will defeat it. You know, I've always said that we need to adopt the tactic of the cactus. The cactus covers itself in spines from every direction so that whenever something comes along and touches it, they get a little prick to remind them not to do it again. And I think that's a good, nice, positive place to leave it. Do you have any final parting words of German wisdom for us, Detlev?
Oh, well, German wisdom, that's a good one. well, you know, I have certain German virtues, if you like to. I am stubborn. I do the things thoroughly, and I usually am victorious.
Yeah.
So let's see.
I think that this is something that we all have to adopt as elements of other people's cultures, but you can't do it by force. You have to do it by choice. You know, I can't be forced to wear a kimono, but occasionally I might just feel fruity enough to do it.
It's nice. Greatly put. Yeah. No, that's fine. Yeah, you know, we just do whatever we can do best. And if we are joining together, and that's our mission as well, to encourage people to join in, and especially now the upcoming United We Strike initiative over the weekend, the 2012 Peace Train, is so important. So, and you are part of it as well, Vinny, as I understand it.
Yeah, that's right. I'll actually be on the United We Strike broadcast twice in one day. For those of you listening from New Zealand, it'll be on, midday till 1 p.m. with me, Charlie McGrath, and Mike Chambers. Real funny show, always is. I called it Randomonium. And also at 5 p.m., we will have a collection of Kiwi activists coming on the United We Strike Peace Train. And everybody needs to choose peace and get on that fracking peace train. And thank you very much, Detlef, for all that you do for the people of the world, basically, and United We Strike. We'll be back.
Thanks, Vinny.
We'll be back just after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with my guest, Michael Badnarik. Don't go anywhere. Pachanga! Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's the fastest 2 hours in talk radio because we're fluoridated, vaccinated, chlorinated, and chemtrailed, just to give you a nice little sprinkling and cherry on top. Oh, yeah. It's lovely being a slave because you get so much choice. False choice. My very special guest today is Michael Badnarik. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vincent. How are you?
I'm really fabulous. Could you explain to the audience just a little bit about yourself and go ahead and plug your websites?
I was running for state representative in Texas and gave a speech to an audience, got a standing ovation, and some friends of mine said, "We want you to run for president." I said, "President of what?" They said, "Well, president of the United States." I thought they were crazy, but ultimately I did run for president. I was the Libertarian nominee in 2004. I ran for Congress in 2006 and raised $400,000. I was the president of the Continental Congress in 2009. I teach an 8-hour class on the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights. And pretty much just an all-around activist fighting for life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for people all around the world, not just in the United States.
So I'm acting under the assumption you never run out of things to fight against.
Well, unfortunately, that may be true. But if I can organize this army of people who all believe that private property is sacred, that we have individual rights along with personal responsibilities, that's a philosophy that is worldwide. One of the things that surprises my students that will be in this Constitution class, and they start to talk about the American dream. And I ask them what they mean by that. And they usually describe the house with the picket fence and, you know, children playing in the yard and having a good job. I said, "Oh, so that's a uniquely American dream, right? That Japanese parents don't love their children. You know, parents in Africa don't want their children to be happy and do better. People don't, you know, around the world don't want to have a job that they can do to make. That's only in America? Are you kidding? This is a human dream." I mean, we call it an American dream, but we're very egotistical here. And I want, you know, life, liberty, and happiness for everybody. But you have to understand how that works, and you have to understand what those principles are.
we should actually review those. What are the principles of liberty that a government really truly has to follow in order to prevent tyranny?
Well, it's really up to the people. I ask my students to imagine a hypothetical conversation between Thomas Jefferson and Patrick Henry. You know, the sun is shining, the crops are growing, the children are happy, and both men agree that life is nearly perfect. And Thomas Jefferson says, you know, Patrick, what we need is a government that's going to raise our taxes and pass laws and basically try to make our lives miserable so that we have a reason to get up in the morning. And I ask my students to imagine that as a possible conversation. Well, it's ridiculous, of course. And I said, well, how about this possible conversation? The sun is shining, everything is wonderful, life on earth is almost heaven. And Jefferson says, you know, Patrick, I think we should create a government that will keep life exactly the way it is. We have this heaven on earth, and we want to organize a system of government that will perpetuate that for ourselves and our posterity, our great-great-great-great-grandchildren. Well, you need to understand how that all works. In the beginning of my class, I focus on the difference between rights and privileges. And, you know, it's my thesis that Americans and probably people around the world do not truly understand the difference between rights and privileges. I can walk back and forth on my land anytime I want. That's a right. If I want to walk across your land, I have to get your permission. You know, and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you can say, sure, Mike, no problem. What are friends for? On Thursday, you're having a bad day, and you can say, no, walk around. That's what fences are for. You can change your mind. The fundamental concept here is that a privilege is granted, and it can be taken away. Rights and privileges are mutually exclusive. They are opposite, like true and false, black and white, rights and privileges. If you can do it without asking, like thinking or dreaming or walking on your own land, it is a right. If someone gives you permission to do it, it is a privilege. We, the people, at least in the United States, it is documented, but people have individual rights. You have a right to life simply because you're alive and breathing. We give government privileges, and we can take those privileges away anytime we want. Our Declaration of Independence explicitly says that when any form of government is violating our rights, we, the people, have the right to alter or abolish it. Well, if we take some of their privileges away, we alter it. If we take all of their privileges away, we abolish it. So in America, at least at one point in history, we acknowledged that the people are the source of all political power, that the government only has authority if we give it to them. We do not require government permission to exist. However, the government does need our permission to exist. And nobody disputes this argument, this line of reasoning. In the United States, I just saw on the news either today or yesterday that Congress, the American Congress, has a 10% approval rating. I'm looking at the news, waiting to see somebody get a rope and stretch somebody. I mean, it is getting that bad in the United States. People are absolutely disgusted with the course government is taking. The American federal government is passing additional unconstitutional laws that are turning the United States into a direct dictatorship. The American people have been asleep for decades, but they are waking up. In the United States, you cannot throw a stick without hitting a protest rally. The problem is that many of these protesters do not understand those fundamental principles. They are angry, but they're not sure how to solve the problem.
Michael, you've really touched on something there, and I just got to jump in. It's exactly right. People know that something's wrong, but they don't know exactly what's wrong, nor do they know how to make it right. And I feel that really kind of personifies, say, Occupy Wall Street and everything like that. And I had this as my Facebook status the other day, was Occupy. They're right that something is wrong, but they're wrong about how to make it right.
That's well said.
And speaking of which, we were talking about rights and privileges, right? I keep saying that. The people being free is a right, okay? The government being free is a privilege, right? And the difficulty here is that, of course, corruption and scumbaggery, as I've come to call it, is a perennial problem, as Bob Chapman told me once. And I was wondering, you know, how do you protect this? Is there a really creative inventor out there who can create a perpetual liberty machine?
No, unfortunately not.
It's all manpower and mind power, then, isn't it, of the people?
It is mind power. And
all of those people wouldn't have that unless they were well-educated and well-informed.
There is an anecdotal story that as Benjamin Franklin came out of the Continental Congress, a woman asked him, you know, what type of government have you given us? And presumably Benjamin Franklin's response was, a republic, madam, if you can keep it. And, you know, people come and argue with me all the time. I am considered a constitutional expert. I've studied the Constitution for 30 years, and everybody thinks that I have some, you know, crystal ball that gives me all the answers. It's really just a matter of logic. And in 2005, our Supreme Court made a ruling in a case called Kelo versus New London, Connecticut, and stated that the government can take the property away from one person and give it to someone else if someone else is planning to pay more in taxes. I had easily 24 phone calls the next day from people going, Michael, they can't do that, can they? Those people are not calling me because they think the Supreme Court can do it. They've already looked at the situation. They already recognize that this is wrong. They can't believe that the Supreme Court would make such a ruling, and they are so incredulous, it's so Alice in Wonderland, they're calling me just to confirm that they're not crazy. They're not really asking me if the Supreme Court has the authority to make the decision. They've already decided that the Supreme Court cannot make that decision. They just want to see if I agree.
It's like they're, I don't know, You see a digital spider in the corner of the room, and you're not anywhere near a computer, and you think you're hallucinating, and you're like, hey, bro, can you see that spider too? And the other person goes, yeah, I can. Holy crap, there really is something there. And this all comes down to logic and common sense. And I feel that common sense is now rarer than gold. And we need to restore the gold standard, you know, because what's happening now is because people believe that other general people like Supreme Court justices, congressmen, all of those various assorted scumbaggery critters are good, decent people like them. Okay, and so when they engage in scumbaggery and do things that appear to be just completely mad and psychotic, they feel as though they cannot understand it. It's a natural reaction for somebody who's completely sane to see a mad world and not understand.
I spoke to a gentleman recently. He was expressing his concern about the future. The economy is bad, unemployment is up, etc. And he was asking me for solutions, and I explained to him that if people do not exercise the First Amendment and talk about it and put the government back within their constitutional limitations, the inevitable conclusion is that we're going to have to shoot and fight and kill in order to protect ourselves. John F. Kennedy is pretty famous for having said, if you make peaceful revolution impossible, you make violent revolution inevitable. And all I did was basically elaborate on that concept. And this person was agitated. And as we analyzed his problem, it turns out that in a survival situation, if he's walking down the sidewalk and someone, either you or I, start to choke him, he will fight back. He will use some level of violence to stop the attack. He will not do that if the person choking him is a police officer. If the person has a badge and uniform, he will resist. And it shocked him as much as it shocked me. He explicitly said that he would allow the police officer to kill him because you cannot resist police authority. Well, I didn't take the time to explain our history of Lexington and Concord, the shot heard around the world, where, you know, farmer standing, you know, at the bridge said, no way. And when we celebrate our Independence Day on 4th of July every year, one of the groups of people that we are celebrating for our independence are the patriots in Lexington and Concord who shot and killed a local police officer. They basically understood that it is possible for government to be in it's wrong. They're thugs. I point to Nazi Germany. Nazi Germany passed all sorts of laws. I mean, if you were Jewish and the police come at 2 o'clock in the morning to drag you out of your house, are you going to go quietly because it's the government and you want to be, you know, good law-abiding citizens? I mean, my friend who I was talking with insisted that it's much better to allow yourself to be arrested, to go quietly, peacefully, and then, you know, win the case in court. And I said, yeah, the Jews tried that same thing. I mean, what kind of a day in court do you think that you're going to get? If you allow the police officer to take your gun away from you, when, seriously, do you think the government is going to give you back that gun?
Yeah. Yeah, the only dock you're going to see when people like that is the one that has the ship that's taken you off to a concentration camp. And you remind me of Martin Luther King's saying is that when injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. And it's written into a lot of countries' constitutions and has been won in legal battles many times, where if you are being unlawfully arrested or assaulted, you can resist. You have complete lawful rights to do that. And again, what was that study? There was a study done in Harvard or something like that, where they had somebody, an authoritarian figure, telling somebody to shock another person on the other side of a screen. And they found out that very few, what was it, like about 10 or 20% of people refused?
It was less than 10%. And it was, I know the name of the college. I can see it on the map. I just can't think of the name of it. But they've got several. No, it's not Harvard. It's in California. It starts with an S. They've done several studies on authority, and if a person is standing there with a white lab coat and a clipboard, and they tell you to do something, you know, 90%+ of the people will do it, and they will follow authority. On my website is constitutionpreservation.org. I have a newsletter, and all the articles that I've written for my newsletter are archived on my website. And one of them was entitled An Appeal to Authority. And very briefly, it talks about when you're 5 years old, you have to do what mom and dad say. You know, when you go to school, you got to listen to the teacher. You get a driver's license, you got to listen to the police officer. Get out of college, get a job, you got to listen to your supervisor. You got to go in and beg, crawl on your knees, asking for a vacation weekend. And the essence is that we have been conditioned, we have been trained since birth to seek permission from authority. We have been, the ability to think for ourselves has been, you know, weaned out of us.
It's kind of like conditioning, you know? We've gone straight past the shampooing and gone straight for the conditioning, ladies and gentlemen. And I can bet you, your bottom dollar, that shower head ain't going to have water coming out of it. It'll have Cyclone B gas. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, most genocidal 2 hours in talk radio. Back in a minute. Back. across America and the world, in the Schwarzenegger sense of the word, the governator sense of the word. Hey, I was thinking what would be a really good idea is actually to build a Terminator, one that that has the specific intention of going back in time and finding all of these Congress critters, Rockefellers, Rothschilds, etc., before they become a problem. You know, it'll be great. But then again, who knows? We might actually mess everything up and wind up a lot worse. The fact of the matter is, you can't change the past, but you can certainly do something in the present to affect the future by learning lessons from the past. And it's something that we've sadly forgotten in many of our nations today, which is why history is now one of the least favorite subjects of the American public. It's very sad, because when a great idea becomes old and forgotten about, when it returns, people believe it's revolutionary, but in the end, everything just winds up going back to the beginning. Michael Badnarik is my guest. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you so much. That was all well said.
We wanted to talk about the Second Amendment as well, and you said over the break that Chairman Mao said, what was it, power all comes...
Political power comes from the barrel of a gun. And I've changed that. Yeah, I've changed it to say that all freedom comes from the barrel of a gun. All of our heroes in the United States, all of our cowboy heroes, I mean, John Wayne rides in and, you know, towards the end of the movie. Well, he's the hero because he's got a gun and he kills all the bad guys. Somebody's breaking into your home at 2 o'clock in the morning, crawling through your bedroom window. You don't dial 911 and call the fire department. You know, you want a big 6-foot-tall police officer with an even bigger gun to come and do what is your responsibility in the first place.
Is that what gun ownership truly is? Is taking... Have you seen the movie Starship Troopers?
I know about it. I've seen little film clips of it, but I don't think I've seen the whole thing.
Well, I've seen it many times. It used to be my favorite film when I was a younger man. And what he says in it is, this year we've explored the failure of democracy, how the social science has brought our world to the brink of chaos. We talked about the veterans, how they took control and imposed the stability that has lasted for generations since. What is the difference between a citizen and a civilian? A citizen accepts personal responsibility for the safety of the body politic, defending it with his life. A civilian does not. If you understand it, do you believe it? I don't know. He says, of course you don't. I doubt anyone here will recognize civic virtue if it reached up and bit you in the ass. And ultimately, that is what we are dealing with here, is citizens now have to take personal responsibility for the safety of their country.
We have a movement here in the United States, and I'm helping to organize it. It is, and your listeners can find it at countysheriffproject.org, countysheriffproject.org. Just over a week ago, we had 115 sheriffs from around the country in the United States show up in Las Vegas, and we presented them with information that, first of all, established the legal basis for their authority. We impressed upon them the fact that they are the highest constitutional authority in the county, and that they can legally and justifiably throw the federal government out. And we had several sheriffs from around the country who have already done that successfully. And we had quite a few of the sheriffs excited and thrilled about the idea that they are not alone. They are not fighting the federal government alone, that they have other sheriffs on the front lines with them, and that they are strongly supported by the people. And, you know, the sheriff's job description is to protect the life, liberty, and private property of the people in the county. So it is at this point in time, it appears to be a peaceful way to change our system. But as we were talking before the break, it's It's a matter of mind. I tell my students that it's an ideological war. If you don't understand the ideas in the Constitution, if you're not willing to stand up and defend those ideas, then we may as well just bury the Constitution under an Egyptian pyramid. Maybe somebody 2,000 years from now will dig it up and get some use for it, because we certainly aren't using it. It's not the Constitution's job to protect us. It is our job to protect the ideals in the Constitution.
When you found a country, essentially what you're trying to do is you're trying to establish a base that will stand the test of time, right? How has the American experiment gone so wrong? And I feel that it's the Federal Reserve, pure and simple. That was basically the death blow to the freedom of the United States and the Congress and everything.
Well, before the Federal Reserve, it was complacency. You know, when everything is quiet and, you know, things are going along the way they're supposed to, you know, we get lazy, we stop. I mean, if you're a soldier and, you know, it appears to be quiet and peaceful and you're walking the perimeter and nothing has happened for a long, long time, you get complacent. And that's when the enemy usually attacks. And especially if the enemy is quiet and doing things under stealth, by the time you recognize that you are under attack, it's almost too late to do anything about it. I agree that the Federal Reserve in the United States has got to go. It is associated and affiliated with the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. And so the United States is not the only country in the world being a victim of the bankers. Every country around the world. And in fact, the United States is actually one of the better off countries. We are not a third world country yet. But all of the economic problems that have been happening in Europe with the euro and all those things, we've had rioting in Greece recently and, you know, Spain and even in London. I mean, I visited London. I taught some computer programming classes there. And I walked up and down Piccadilly Circus, and I'm seeing on news where, I mean, people are rioting downtown London, Piccadilly Circus, in a corner where I walked through. So the United States hasn't gotten to that status yet, but we already have the Occupy Wall Street camping out all over the place, and I think it's just a matter of time before we do have, quote, civil unrest, was just a euphemism for rioting in the streets.
Do you think the American public is prepared for such eventualities?
No, obviously not. If they were prepared, we wouldn't have let it get this bad. Again, we were talking before the break that you have to understand this stuff. You know, if you're just kind of going along and letting everything happen, when something bad goes wrong, you have no idea how to fix it. If people don't understand what the basis and the source of liberty and happiness is, then they're certainly not going to be able to defend it. You know, if your access to food is just taking stuff out of the refrigerator and you've never had to plant anything, you've never had to work on a farm, when the refrigerator is empty and there is no food, you're screwed. Because, I mean, other than opening up the refrigerator and looking for more food, you don't know what to do about it. So, I mean, metaphorically, if you don't know what the source of liberty and happiness is, if you don't know how to defend it, when it disappears, you're not going to have any clue on how to get it back.
Kind of like the rights you have, if you don't fight to defend them, you'll lose them. And I feel, frankly, that the American population has become so inert, so dumbed down, so dependent, and very, very socialist, surprisingly, remarkably a socialist country. That's what the United States really is. It's long left the whole original concept of its basic principles well behind. And I feel that there is no recourse for the people who have purposely done this to the American people. And they will suffer immense consequences because, as everybody in the world knows, If there's one group of people who you don't want to mess with, it's the American public.
So it looks like that from New Zealand, too. It's not just me. I thought that maybe I was just too close to the problem and that, you know, I was getting wrapped around the axle. But it looks like socialism all the way from where you're sitting, too.
And I live in a socialist country. I know what it looks like.
So, yes, you're absolutely correct. And that's why I spend so much of my time trying to teach my 8-hour class. I have an 8-hour class on the Constitution, and I basically am teaching these principles so that people can restore liberty, and they know how to do it. And most of my students thank me because I have changed their lives in such a fundamental way. They will never look at the American government the same way again.
As a patriot, I feel that the responsibility, like, people don't know what a patriot is. I don't think anymore, because it's gone by the wayside. You know, nationalism has been demonized. Anybody with a gun or wants to homeschool their children is a bad terroristic type person. And for me, patriotism has nothing to do with the love of one's government. It is only to do with the love of one's country, and the country is nothing without its people. So ultimately, if you're a patriot, it means that you have loyalty to your people and your people alone. Do you agree with that?
Well, I teach a class on the Constitution, and my students are stunned when I say, well, if you want to burn the Constitution, shred the Bill of Rights, I don't care. And they can't understand. I said, well, my passion, my dedication is to those principles, not to the piece of paper. It's to the life, liberty, and private property of people of the world. That is what I am dedicated to. The Constitution happens to give us wording to that effect. It gives us an outline. But again, if we're not willing to read the Constitution, understand it, and defend it, then the Constitution becomes a worthless piece of paper. And it's going to be up to each individual person to defend themselves. So,
in other words, the Constitution has shown you the door, but you are the one who has to walk through it.
Well said.
Yes. How can we reconcile that? You know, it's like, how do you give somebody the motivation to want to be a patriot, to want to stand up for liberty and freedom? And I feel that, unfortunately, they have to suffer at the hands of tyranny before they will actually go, and the light goes on, a light that cannot be extinguished, a light that chases away the darkness in every direction. But it's only by being assaulted by the darkness that you have that light switched on to a degree. And it's very sad, you know. Why can't we have a burning fire inside us from birth to want to preserve our freedoms and liberties from tyrants? Has the education system, and more to the point, the effect on parenting of recent times and mass media, to what extent has that produced this type of society that refuses to see the value in it?
I agree. It is the parents' fault for, you know, being dumb and allowing their children to be dumber. I do think that there is a biological basis to it. When I got my first job after college, the business that I was working in instructed all of us to take a personality profile, kind of a psychological evaluation, and there were different attributes they were measuring. And one of the attributes they were measuring was not complacency, but your willingness to go along with the crowd just to keep everything quiet. Conformity. They were measuring your level of conformity to the group. And on a scale of 0 to 100%, I scored zero. Zero. I am not willing to go along with the group if the group is wrong. You know, I'm smart enough to add 2 plus 2 and come up with 4. I know the world is round. And anybody who wants to disagree with that, you know, it's like, you're wrong, I'm right. And so, it was very interesting because everybody had to interview with their supervisor and review the results of the test. And my supervisor looked at it and he says, I've noticed that you've scored zero on conformity. I said, yeah, the test is pretty accurate, isn't it?
Hey, and that's another element. People are afraid of being ostracized by the group. And because, you know, they'll say that you're wrong. They'll tell you things or whatever. And I say, look, you have nothing to fear from people who are wrong when you're right. Nothing to fear whatsoever. What have they got? What weapons do they have that they can use against you that you can't smash like a ball peen hammer? Okay? There is nothing they got. They have no foundation. They're rudderless jellyfish who simply go along with everything. What do sheep do and cows do when they're just about to die? They go along with everything, don't they? And they wind up seeing very, very nasty consequences. Well, they taste pretty good. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Michael Badnarik, and we will be right back just after the break. Join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. It's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, allegedly. To the Vinnie Eastwood Show final segment with my newly found good friend, the New Zealand wool glove wearing Michael Badnarik, coming out live from Indiana in the continental USSA, the ultimate in communist dictatorship under the watchful eye of the uber Stalinistic Barack H. O'Berry Satoru. Oh, yeah. Hey, and how do you feel about the current elections coming up, Michael? I think we want to end on a very low note, you know, and something that really will depress people.
But you sure picked a good one. I ran for president in 2004 and Congress in 2006. And the things that I learned from those elections are that no good deed goes unpunished, and that the elections are so corrupt in the United States that people who believe that they are voting for candidates are really naive and misguided. I wish Ron Paul all the luck in the world, but the walls that they are putting up to prevent his word from getting out to the people is just incredible. I mean, it's not even subtle anymore.
Can you please elaborate specifically on these things? Because it's interesting you should bring up Ron Paul and him being censored out, because I had a listener yesterday send me an email asking me specifically to cover just this topic. And I said, yeah, I'll bring somebody on to do it. I don't know who can comment on it, but hey, here you are.
Yeah, well, one of the first caucuses in the United States is the Iowa caucus. And Ron Paul has so many volunteer supporters that they significantly and measurably increased the population of Ames, Iowa. They basically overwhelmed the Iowa caucus. I personally believe, but cannot prove, that Ron Paul actually won that caucus. But he did so well that they could only back him up to second place. You know, they admitted that he had gotten at least second place in the Iowa caucus. And then in all the Sunday morning news programs, they were talking about the Iowa caucus. They would talk about who won first place, who won third place, and who won fourth place. They never mentioned Ron Paul. They never mentioned him. And we have a person, John Stewart, does a program here called The Daily Show.
Yeah.
And he's going, you know, so-and-so is in third place. After who? He goes, how often have you seen an automobile race where they don't mention the guy who came in second? I mean, the bias against Ron Paul has been blatant. Even non-Ron Paul supporters are admitting that, you know, this is getting out of hand. And I wish Ron Paul well. I think that he has gathered so much support that he may actually win the Republican nomination. It's still possible, in spite of all of the corruption.
See, but, now that would be interesting to see if Ron Paul actually wound up getting the Republican nomination. I don't believe he will because of the corruption, but if he did it in spite of the corruption, mate, that would be a day to celebrate. I would actually probably take out a credit card and go out and buy myself some Dom Perignon or something like that to celebrate that day.
It would definitely mark a change in the way things are going to happen. And I just claim that it's possible. I would not certainly not be surprised if they took it away from him. But yeah. Again, we are working on a different project. The County Sheriff Project is where we are supporting these sheriffs, and they have the ethical and legitimate right to throw the federal government out, and we are educating them that they have the backing of the people. You know, we are going to do this, hopefully, peacefully, but, you know, we are making our voices heard, and we are asserting our authority.
Do sheriffs have the ability to arrest corrupt news reporters?
I would say, well, they are the highest authority in the county. And so if a news reporter is saying something that you don't like, that's not corrupt because, you know, we have this First Amendment thing here. So they would actually have to be committing a crime. First Amendment does not allow you to say anything you want. You have to be responsible for the words that you speak.
So deliberately misrepresenting election results, would that count as a crime under U.S. code?
I don't know it would under U.S. code, because the U.S. code is not for us. It's to enhance the pocketbook of the politician. You got to understand, you know, who's working the game over here. I was watching a documentary with my mother this morning, and one of the people in the documentary was suggesting that they take all these smart people and take them to court as witnesses. And I paused the documentary and I said, well, that would work if truth, honesty, and justice actually had a place in the American court system. It doesn't. They don't care what's true. They don't care what's right. They don't care what is just. They have already decided before you walk in the room who's going to win. And, you know, they just let you talk and blow off your hot air. And then you say, or then the judge says, okay, you're guilty. This is how much you owe. And, you know, people in the United States are stunned. If people read my book, I've written a book called Good to Be King. And in it, there's a short story about a friend of mine who put a loaded gun in a holster on the steps of the Denver Capitol and was arrested so that he could take it to court and argue the Constitution and the Second Amendment. And the judge was telling my friend and his attorney, you are not allowed to mention the Constitution in this court. And, I mean, it's not just once. I mean, I've shortened it up. But how does any judge in the United States explain that you're not allowed to mention the U.S. Constitution? And that's because we operate in statutory courts which are outside the Constitution.
Yeah, yeah. In England, what they're doing now is constitution, I feel, is very, very much similar to what's known as common law in England. And what activists are now doing when they go to court, what they do is they affirm from the judge that they are acting as a common law judge, not as a statutory magistrate. And once they get the judge to admit that, boom, they've won, because they know that their rights are protected under that judge via his oath. And if that judge does not keep his oath, they have the lawful authority to actually go and arrest him. And they have been doing it. And for anybody who believes that the United States court system or any court system actually represents the people or has anything to do with justice, okay, have a look at the 2000 election. Who decided who the president would be? It didn't really matter who the president would be, but who decided who the president would be? The people or the court? It was the court.
Well, if people believe that the court system is just in the United States or anywhere else, I've got oceanfront property in Arizona to sell you. Just give me a call. I'll make you a good deal.
Yeah, yeah. And I also have at least 1,000 acres on Mars for you to purchase at $1 million an acre as well.
Yeah.
And
for those people who don't have a lot of money, you can just send me $25 cash in a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I will send you your book on how to spot a con.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think what we have in our countries right now is exactly the same problem, whichever country you go, and I say this repeatedly, is that there is no escape from a new world order. There is only resistance, and there's only true patriots who don't care for their government, but care for their people and their country, that will actually make things right again. And I wanted to thank you very much, Michael, for coming on the show with me today. And if you wouldn't mind just plugging your websites and perhaps leaving us off with a nice patriotic phrase or verse of some description.
My website is constitutionpreservation.org. You can read my newsletter articles. You can subscribe to my newsletter. I've written a book called Good to Be King, which describes the principles in the Constitution, and so it would apply to anybody in the world, not just people in the United States. And you were talking about resistance in, I forget which television series it was, they used to say that resistance was futile. Well, I've modified that as well. I've said that resistance is mandatory. And if you just sit back and let the government do whatever it will, if they want, you will end up in a concentration camp. It's hard for me to believe that anybody would not resist for their own survival. But I know that you and I will resist, and we will restore liberty.
We will. It's inevitable, as Agent Smith would say.
Denny, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you, my friend.
I think the feeling is mutual. We'll be back some other time, ladies and gentlemen, probably with another fabulous guest. Who knows? it's a nice random show that we've got here. If you're a truther who really just kind of doesn't want to buy into the fear and get freaked out and get depressed and start calling people slaves and sheeple or anything, come and listen to the Vinnie Eastwood show. Just because you're going to be exterminated doesn't mean you can't have a good time while you're doing it. So check out the archives at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.